This is The Impromptu, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. And now, your hosts for today, Michael Norton and Alex Knight.
Hello.
Hey there.
I got something for you.
Yeah. Just the flute, huh?
Wonderful, Picard. Wonderful.
Yeah, that's the sad flute telling me I might not be getting my watch on Friday.
What's the deal with that?
Oh, God, I don't even know. Like, me and everyone else who ordered a steel with a black sport band have started getting this email of death from Apple.
Mm.
It goes, "Dear Michael, your Apple Watch will be delivered between April 24th and May 8th. When your order ships, we'll send you an email with a specific delivery date and tracking information." Which reads to me like, we've screwed up horribly. Please don't hate us. You're not getting your watch on Friday. But I could be wrong.
It's like the cable guy. You know, we'll be there anytime between 8 and 12, or we'll be there anytime between 3 and 7.
Yeah, and like I haven't been charged for it yet. It hasn't hit my credit card. And yeah. I mean, it could, everyone who's gotten a shipment notification, it's next day, so it could still ship tomorrow and get here for Friday, but
Yeah,
I'm starting to lose hope a bit.
I thought I came across something that said Apple was sending out the sports edition to developers immediately so they could actually have something to develop on. Was there any truth to that?
Yeah, they kind of did a random lottery or something. Like, they basically gave random developers the opportunity to purchase a sport with a blue sport band to have it shipped early next week, I think. Like, guaranteed shipment early next week. So that they could start developing for it. I mean, not that that stopped people. We have, like, over 2,000 watch apps at this point. Half my phone supports the watch.
Yeah, there have been a crap load of app updates with watch support. I noticed 1Password now has an Apple Watch, but I don't see the use case for that.
Well, their idea is that you would store things like PIN numbers for like a door lock.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a quick access point for those things, which I could kind of see. Like, if you have a gem lock or some kind of combination lock, then you just like tap on your watch and it comes up automatically.
Sure. I guess.
Yeah. It's not exactly ideal for all use cases, but it could come in handy.
Right.
Then you've got
we've probably lost all listeners now talking about the Apple Watch.
Yes. Beware, tech talk. No, I think it's doing really well. They've certainly managed to hit the fashion world by storm.
Yeah. I mean, the watch has just completely overshadowed every aspect of media, which is fascinating. Yeah. Because, well, like, I haven't seen anything quite like that since really the first iPhone and possibly iPad launch. Like, major new like product entry. This is another iteration of something you already know and it's really not going to be that different, but something completely new. And it's not just, I feel like it's like hard to avoid any talk about the Apple Watch. Like, you just looking at my Twitter timeline, everybody's talking about it and it's kind of overwhelming. It's interesting. Don't get me wrong. Like, I think the Apple Watch is an interesting product. I haven't ordered one yet, and I probably won't order one just yet. I still haven't decided if I'm even going to touch the first generation model. But that aside, it is interesting that it's taken over everybody's lives. I mean, even quote unquote regular people that don't really follow tech news, friends and family and whatnot, can't help but bring the Apple Watch up in a conversation.
Yeah. I mean, you've got Beyonce wearing one at Coachella. So it's kind of hitting the mainstream. You've got Taylor Swift posting her Apple Watch on Instagram. Like, all of this stuff is happening, and this is hitting the mainstream. Like, normal mm-hmm. people, normal, like, what's that major target demographic? 18 to 20 something?
Yeah.
Like, complete saturation at this point.
Like, I'm just curious, what version did Taylor Swift?
She had the 38 millimeter edition yellow gold with red modern buckle.
What's the red modern buckle? Is that the leather one or the...
Yeah, it's the leather one.
Okay.
And Beyonce had the custom gold link bracelet that Karl Lagerfeld has.
And this is not something that's for sale?
Nope.
Ooh, exclusive. Aren't you fancy? Ooh.
Yes. Yes, exclusive. And also this last week in Milan, Jony Ive unveiled a bunch of alternate sport band colors that apparently are also exclusive, including a red sport band that mm-hmm. I am envious of.
Yeah, it looks good. I like red. I think most people know that.
Yeah, it's kind of a running gag at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm sure some of those straps have to hit market at some point, right? Because the margins on those accessories are massive.
Oh, through gotta the be. Roof. I've had the thought that they're probably going to do something like the fashion world, where they come out with a new collection of bands every so often. With fashion, it's spring, summer, fall, winter. But Apple could split it up through the year. They could do a collection around now, a collection around WWDC, and a collection around Christmas to kind of break it up and get people buying bands throughout the year. Because then they could have basically a continuous revenue stream from people buying new bands for their watch.
Yeah. Absolutely, it makes sense. I think it stands to reason that they would do something like that. But for me, what I find even more interesting than the tech, I mean, the tech is interesting as well, but everyone's talking about like the Apple Watch and what it can or can't do. But for me, something that I find even more interesting, and maybe we can kind of elucidate on this a little bit, but it's really interesting seeing the cultural impact that the product is making. It's more than just a piece of hardware on your wrist. Like, at least that is how Apple has been marketing it. I mean, it's clearly being marketed as a bespoke, finely crafted fashion accessory. So it's really interesting to see how, you know, in the coming months and years, how that's going to have an effect on everybody. That we're not just going to be looking at this as some really futuristic, like Dick Tracy type of device where we can make phone calls, but it's moved just beyond the hardware. It is like, you know, it's and this may sound corny, but it's like a part of you. It's a part of your persona. It's a part of your your fashion sense and how you want people to perceive you. At least I'm sure for many people that will buy this type of watch, especially the Apple Watch and perhaps even the Apple Watch edition, because it's very, very high end and not a lot of people are going to be able to afford something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it kind of goes to what Jony Ive has been talking about all this time. Like, they like watches. They love watches. So they wanted to make something that was a really nice watch, not just a replacement for a watch per se, but something that you enjoy wearing that then can do all of these things as well as tell time. I think wearable technology is just really compelling just because a lot of the time we feel disconnected from our hardware. Like, you have your phone in your hand, but really you're tapping on glass without any real feedback per se. Whereas the watch, it's on you, and with the haptic feedback, you're getting a completely different feeling from notifications and from system interaction.
I'm still wrapping my brain around the fact that my childhood self is like blown away that the day has actually come to fruition, that effectively the stuff that I saw on TV shows where people would talk into a watch, like Knight Rider or Dick Tracy talking into his watch, the fact that the day has come that we have like a two-way communication device on our wrist is like, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah. I mean, more importantly, that we have it and that it doesn't die in 5 minutes.
Right.
Like, at least it lasts a day. I think they'll improve that as time goes on. Like, I think the current 18 to 20 hour limit is just the start. I think we'll probably see it go up in the coming years. But at the same time, I kind of feel like having that limit is sometimes a good thing because it creates a routine and a habit. When you go to bed at night, you put your watch on your charging stand. When you wake up, you take it off and put it on. So that becomes a habit. And then you're never in a situation where you become disappointed that it's dead, because every night you charge it. Whereas with something like the Pebble, the battery lasts for 7 days roughly. So you can never be sure when it's going to go low. So you don't really develop as much of a routine around it.
Mm, that's so interesting.
Then it's like,
right, because you're going to just push it to the edge. Like, oh, I have nothing to worry about.
Exactly.
Stays like, off.
Yeah. So you probably, like, I would always just leave it on my desk or whatever. Like, I wouldn't charge it. I would just leave it there. And more often than not, I would end up forgetting about it. And then one day I'd wake up and look at it and go, oh, it's dead now. Because it doesn't create that routine as much.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, maybe there's something to be said for keeping that limit roughly around a day. I mean, if they can get it to a solid 24 hours so that it's like,
that's like a day and a half of regular use.
Yeah. Like, if you forget to charge it, or yeah, even if they wanted to add sleep tracking, 24 hours would be good, because yeah, then it'll at least last through the night while you're asleep.
Sure.
So that then I guess you could charge it at work or something when you get in.
Yeah, that's fairly common. I mean, I know, at least I can say that there have been numerous occasions where I just forget to charge my phone at the end of the day. And, you know, I wake up and commute to work and get to work and realize that, you know, I need to charge my phone. And it was more of an issue in the past, of course, with older phones. Now that I have an iPhone 6, I get pretty good battery life, and I generally get at least, you know, definitely a full day. You know, the battery will last. I'll charge it in the morning, and then the following day, sometime in the afternoon, I'll have to charge it. You know, that's partly the iPhone 6 battery being larger than the 5S, and partly me, you know, being very judicial about what notifications I allow on my device. But yeah, I mean, absolutely. I would hope that they would be able to squeeze, you know, that kind of battery life out of the second generation model, but time will tell, because Apple is insanely focused on making things thinner.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that's going to happen in this case. I think for the watch, it's already kind of that size where it's like, this is a nice watch. Like, if you make it thinner and lighter, it starts to feel kind of unsubstantial.
Sure.
Like, with a watch, you want to kind of feel it a bit. Like, mm-hmm. I'm wearing this watch and it feels solid. And if they make it lighter, then it's not going to have that kind of quality to it, because it's not just a regular Apple product anymore. It's jewelry. So jewelry has certain expectations that come with it, and feeling substantial that you are wearing something is one of those qualities. So honestly, I could see them maintaining the form factor and simply improving the internals for at least the next one or two revisions. They might make it sleeker a little bit, but they are going to be constrained by how much battery they can fit into it, and how big the chip is, and how big the sensors are. So from a hardware perspective, they're probably not going to be able to make it much smaller than it currently is. At least not without major innovation.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so much that a die shrink is going to take you.
Yeah, I mean, we're already approaching the limits, unless somebody comes up with something insane.
Right, yeah.
Like, we're already getting towards, like, 4 nanometers. Actually, no. What are we at now? I think we're at 12, approaching 8 or 9.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. I think the absolute limit is 2 or 3, at which point electrons start to jump paths. And then the whole chip basically dies.
Yeah, I mean, I just think from a fashion perspective, the way the watch currently looks, as far as the aesthetics are concerned, I can see people still wearing, like, I'm envisioning people wearing these watches 3 years from now, regardless if there's a new model or not. And I think it would still, I think the design is classic enough that you could pull that off. Like, you could wear an Apple watch with, like, a Milanese loop, and you could wear it with, like, a dress shirt or a suit and go to a fancy dinner party, and you would still look good, and the watch wouldn't really look that dated.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely went for a very timeless design. I mean, the Milanese loop is a really classic band. A lot of modern watches don't even use it. So, yeah.
I mean, in all these other Android Wear watches that are out now,
they're not even worth talking about, well, really.
They already look dated.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine 3 years from now, those things are just going to look like Fisher-Price toys?
Oh, yeah. Well, they already do next to the Apple Watch.
I mean, some of them are huge. I think it was either the Samsung Galaxy or the Maybe it was one of the LG ones that I was looking at. It was just really chunky. Like, it was at least take two Apple Watches, stack them on top of each other, and that's how thick it was.
Yeah. Like, I'm looking at my Pebble right now. So bad. Like, they have that new one, the Pebble Time. It looks better, but...
Well, that's not even shipping till the fall, right?
I think it ships next month, or at least it's supposed to.
Okay.
But we all know how the original Pebble turned out.
Are you talking about the Pebble Time?
Yeah. Like, the original Pebble Kickstarter, there were people that didn't get their backer rewards until well after it was already selling at Best Buys in the States.
Wow.
So, yeah. It might not go according to plan for them. Especially since so many people backed it this time around. They're now the highest funded Kickstarter project ever.
Yeah, that was a pretty astounding thing to see. Not entirely surprised that they were able to pull it off again, but it's still, I mean, it was crazy how much money that they were raising, and just like, you could literally refresh the page every 30 seconds and you would see just like it's going up by thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of dollars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it raised, the final count was 20.338 million.
Yeah, that's impressive.
78,000 backers. Huge. But yeah, they could end up waiting quite a while for their watches.
Well, we've probably bored people enough with the Apple Watch stuff. There's a couple other things on my list here I wanted to get to. Of course, I know a lot of people are talking about the Daredevil series, and I don't want to talk about it unless you've actually finished the first season. Have you finished
it? I have finished it.
All right. Well, let's talk about it for a little bit.
Hashtag avocados at law.
Avocados at law, exactly. Love it. Fantastic series. I admittedly am not a massive Daredevil fan. The previous movies, let's not even go into them.
We will forget about those.
Pretend they never happened. I know enough about the character to know that this show is incredibly faithful to it. I think the casting is spot on. I think the portrayal of Matt Murdock / Daredevil is fantastic. I think Vincent D'Onofrio is freaking spot on as Kingpin. And I think one of the things that humanizes him a bit in the show is I love the fact that he has this... Other than just like the tough exterior, he has this gentle and soft side and this lacking self-confidence aspect. He has a hard time talking to women. And I love the backstory, how they really go into his past.
Yeah.
And you start to feel really like kind of sad for him because he had such a rough childhood.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways he's... still that scared little boy.
Oh, absolutely.
And it really shows, like, in that lack of self-confidence, in that nervousness that he has, the way he'll kind of be very soft-spoken and then have bursts of rage. Like, it's definite personality disorder. Like, and the fact that he pulls that off so believably.
Yeah.
Amazing. I also enjoyed the fact that the show took the time to properly do other languages.
Yeah, that was really great.
So one of the characters in the show speaks Mandarin. And
now, is that Madame Gao?
Yeah. Who may be another character in the Marvel Universe, in fact. But we'll get to that in a minute. just the way they handled it with the, like, the subtitles were well done, but more importantly, they took the time to get it correct. And Vincent D'Onofrio actually apparently did a very passable job.
I definitely wouldn't be able to judge his accent, but I was really surprised how much dialogue he managed to pull off. Like, that is incredibly hard. It's hard enough memorizing dialogue as an actor. Memorizing giant passages in another language that you don't know, that's insane.
Oh, yeah. The thread I read, they basically said he had a very thick accent, but he did surprisingly well, considering. So, yeah, I would say it's probably one of the only examples I've seen of a TV show or a movie kind of bothering.
Sure. Yeah, because it's not just the one or two lines in another language, like Mandarin.
Like, they're having an entire conversation.
They're having like minutes at a time, entire conversations that aren't in English. And I was really, really surprised by that.
Yeah.
And that shows the care that's going into the production of the show, which is good to see. I mean, you know, the people that are involved in this clearly care about the source material. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of supervision from Marvel, which helps. You know, they got people that they work with who are not just Marvel executives, but you know, comic book writers that are references to the series. They're advisors, and you know, I love that you don't see Daredevil's actual costume until the very last episode. I love the whole, you know, I love the fact that he's just some dude in black cloth, and he, you know, they show him getting hurt and he gets beat up many, many times. You know, and you know, there are some close calls where, I mean, he could have easily died, and you know, but luckily enough, he has a friend who happens to be a nurse that ends up taking care of him. But you know, I just love the whole buildup. I love how long he spends in the black costume, and you know, I like the explanation about where he gets this costume from, that he has that guy that ends up, you know, making the light armor for Fisk, and he ends up, you know, making a deal with him to make him the real suit. I thought particularly the very last episode in season one, where like the closing scene where you see him in the red costume and he jumps off the building, I thought it was just like freeze frame, and it just looked like such an iconic Daredevil pose.
Oh yeah. It's basically the TV's version of Daredevil number one cover.
Yeah. What are those weapons that he has? I don't know what those are called.
Oh, Billy Clubs.
Billy Clubs. Okay. Yeah.
There might be a specific name for the version he uses. Yeah. I'm not sure.
I'm glad they brought Stick into it as well.
Oh, yeah. Like, this was the other thing I wanted to go into. Like, they have set up a ton of Marvel Universe mythology with this season. They've set up the Hand, the Chaste, Steel Serpent. So that's Iron Fist's main villain.
You just mentioned three things I have no idea about. It sounds like you know more about
so
this than I do.
The Hand is a sect of ninjas who worship a demon or demons. And that's what I think that child was, the Black Sky. I think it was a child that was possessed, or possibly a hybrid. Okay. Bad, basically.
Right. And Stick ends up killing the kid.
Yeah. Well, I'm not so sure.
You never see
it,
but he.
But
well, you never see it, but he says it does.
Well, obviously they can't show that. It's Netflix, but it's not. Yeah.
So there's the Hand, and what was the second one?
So that's Stick, and the guys he works with, they split off from the hand, I think. I think that's how it went.
And they I want more backstory on Stick, because I don't know. Like I said, I've never read the Daredevil comics, so I don't really know much about him. Other than, and I don't know how much of this is accurate to the comics, but I thought it was really awesome and simultaneously messed up that effectively he was raising a child soldier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if that's how it happened in the comic. It might have.
Makes it really more, I guess, gritty and just more visceral. Like, this kid has been robbed of his childhood.
Yeah, although, on the other hand, he did go to school. He did well. He went to law school.
Yeah.
And he's a lawyer.
But it's had a, it's, yeah, but he's, but look at the effect that it's had on him.
But it wasn't entirely terrible. I mean, if it,
well, he's able to extract, you know, good out of the situation.
Yeah, I mean, and if it weren't for Stick, like, he probably still would have been depressed and kind of.
Well, he couldn't even control his powers after he lost his eyesight, and so like he was like any little sound, any like little pin drop was unbearable for him.
Yeah, like.
His hearing was
super sensitive. He would have been suffering for his entire life, probably.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'm not putting all the blame on Stick. I'm just saying it's still kind of messed up when you sit back and think about like his life and like, you know, how, you know, what he had to go through to be trained in that way. And the fact that Stick is kind of like this father figure to him, although he's so cold and distant. And says that, you know, you can't have relationships. You know, they're just going to, you know, they're going to tie you down. Those people that you love will eventually get hurt, and your enemies are going to come after you, and they're going to use that to their advantage. And they're going to, you know, that's how they're going to get to you. Which, well, I mean, seems like sound advice on the surface. I mean, that's kind of why Bruce Wayne doesn't have relationships.
Yeah. It's, from what I know of the comic, it's pretty rocky.
Now, what about Foggy? Is he like a Marvel character at all?
He's, stick him in he's there always been, Matt Murdock's best friend. Okay. He didn't really show up much in the movies that shall not be named.
I thought that was Jon Favreau's character.
Was he in that movie?
He directed Daredevil and starred in it. Interesting. But
I don't know.
I don't know. It's been so long.
I think whoever played Foggy showed up in like literally one scene, and that was it.
Okay.
But his role in the show is a lot more like the comics. With a twist, of course, but they've kind of handled things a little differently. Like, they're supposed to have sort of a love triangle with Karen, but it looks like that's maybe not going to happen.
Yeah, I don't see that working.
Especially because Foggy's with that blonde lawyer now, seemingly.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, I wouldn't go as far as to say he's with her. I mean, he's slept with her, and she's the ex, right? So, I mean, it remains to be seen if he's going to end up back with her or not. But, I mean, she's not very likable.
Yeah, though she did do the right thing in the end.
Yeah. No, she eventually came through.
And then got to see all of her bosses arrested by the FBI.
Yeah, that must have been pretty nice. But, you know, I was just thinking too, you know, one of the things that I find makes a villain more interesting to me is not the ones that are just kind of crazy and evil for like no reason other than they just like to create chaos. Like the ones that are more relatable, the ones where like as a writer, if you can kind of make the reader or in this case watcher, if you can kind of look through the lens of the villain and somewhat understand in their own twisted way and how they look at the world, that it kind of does make sense in their eyes. It helps me connect with that character more. And like I said, I think that and all the other stuff that they're doing with Fisk's character really makes him more interesting. And he's, because of that, he's so unpredictable. He is this bomb waiting to go off. You know, he's suddenly this really, really gentle. At times he can be this really kind and gentle person. It obviously is capable of caring for someone deeply. But then the slightest thing to mess that up, or if it's, you know, like Daredevil messing up his plans, just this explosive rage, like a nuclear bomb going off, and it's so frightening.
Yeah. Steer clear of car doors. Like,
exactly. Oh, that was a brutal scene.
I was surprised they showed so much of it, too.
Yeah. Well, it's Netflix. Yeah. But, you know, it's just like you never know if Fisk's going to kiss you or rip your head off.
Yeah, pretty much.
And that alone just is you know, it's more interesting.
One thing I never quite bought, though, I think he really owes his empire to Wesley. Because, I don't know, I feel like he wouldn't have been able to do it on his own.
He's definitely, I don't know. I mean, he definitely, he wouldn't have been able to do it by himself, that's for sure. That's why he has hired goons. But Wesley is to Kingpin what Riker is to Picard. You know, he's the trusted second hand, you know, aide. He's, you know, Kingpin has his strengths, but Wesley like effectively completes him. Mm-hmm. He's very good at what he does. And he's obviously essential to the whole operation, and he's really broke. I mean, beyond that, he's got a very strong friendship with Wesley. So he's really, really broken up at the fact that he's been shot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's brutal.
But I really dislike Wesley.
Well, I don't know.
Just the way he treats people. Like, because, I mean, he's, I guess, no better than Kingpin, but I don't know.
He grew on you.
He's so like, slow, slimy.
By the time that he got killed, I was like, oh no. Like,
yeah.
He was a villain, sure, but he was kind of likable in his own way. Like,
right,
by that
right.
time, you were just like, this guy's kind of cool, and he's keeping Kingpin under control, and like everything's fine as long as he's around. Oh no.
I actually was not expecting them to kill him.
That was like super abrupt.
So early in the series.
But he made such a critical mistake. Like, who puts a gun on a table and leaves it loaded?
That was pretty stupid.
Like, she wasn't even restrained.
But I mean, he's using his fear tactics. He brought, you know, he thought, well, here I am. I'm, you know, a confident, strong man, and I've got a very scared woman in front of me. So I'm going to put this gun on. See, the way I look at it is that he's so overly confident and somewhat arrogant that he thinks he can put a gun on the table, and where he misjudged it is that he thought he had enough power over someone that they would be so fearful that they wouldn't dare reach for that gun.
Hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I could see that.
But you're right. I mean, I didn't initially think of it that way, but you're right. It does seem like Wesley maybe keeps Kingpin in check many times.
Yeah, like...
Because otherwise, I feel like Kingpin would like really.
Yeah, like a lot of the time, Wesley ended up de-escalating things. Like, yeah. Kind of stage managed him a lot.
Sure.
And
Madame Gao certainly liked Wesley.
Yeah. Well, she respected him at any rate.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she said that he was always courteous to her. Something like that.
But, yeah, it's...
Yeah, he...
although, I mean, he kind of has Vanessa still, but I don't know how that dynamic is going to work in season two. Yeah.
How long do you think it's going to last that Fisk is in prison?
He'll probably get out.
See, I'm wondering if that was it for season one and that they're going to kind of go in a different direction, introduce some other new menace.
I think they'll introduce some new stuff in season two. Like, because they're doing this show and then Jessica Jones is out next, I think. Or is Luke Cage out next? I'm not sure what the order is.
One of those.
Then there's also Iron Fist, which they've referenced in the first season of Daredevil. So they've kind of set some things up for Iron Fist.
I must have totally glossed over that. When did that happen?
So you'll notice that they put a stamp on all of Madame Gao's heroin. The little red symbol on all the packets.
Yeah.
That is the mark of the Steel Serpent, who is Iron Fist's main nemesis.
Hmm.
And
interesting.
Involved in that is this sort of weird mystical alien thing that you can only get to from Tibet. So people have read into that, the comment that Madame Gao made that her home is a lot further than China. And
right.
They've guessed, I think correctly, that Madame Gao may actually be one of Steel Serpent's associates, the Crane Mother, because she was able to knock Daredevil across the room.
Yeah, like, she's
not a normal old lady. Let's put it that way.
No. The amount of force coming from that that old frame seems kind of crazy.
So it's likely that that's who the character is, but we probably won't find out until the Iron Fist show starts. And we may get more hints of it throughout. Like, all of these shows are eventually going to turn into the Defenders miniseries. So, by definition, they all kind of have to link up anyways. So...
Mm-hmm. Tell me more about that.
So, at the end, after the first season of all these shows run, they're going to do, I think it's about 8 episodes... They're going to do a series called The Defenders, and that's all of them getting together and creating kind of a New York version of the Avengers, where they defend the little guy.
Okay.
Like, they're not really about the big stuff. They're about making the city better, keeping innocent people from being hurt by the bad guys.
Right, right. Now, Daredevil lives in New York, right? And that is the same city that Tony Stark lives in, isn't it? Or, no, that's Fantastic Four. And the Fantastic Four, aren't they in New York as well?
It's not going to be the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Okay. Okay. But didn't they make some references to... I know they made a Captain America reference.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely in the same continuity.
And I think they're acknowledging the whole battle in New York.
It takes place after that. Avengers. During the rebuilding. It's not clear exactly when it occurs, but it's definitely after the Avengers. There were no references to Hydra, so I'm not sure if it's before or after Winter Soldier. But definitely after the Avengers.
Well, perhaps they'll get to that at some point in the coming seasons. And I hope Daredevil continues for many seasons, because if they can keep this up at this level of quality,
it's so popular they've already renewed it. So I think that'll hold for all the shows if they're this good.
Yeah. Yeah, we shall see.
And they also confirmed that the Defenders will be in Avengers Infinity War Part 2. So all of these guys on the small screen will go to the big screen.
They're really lining up these movies.
Oh, yeah.
We're not going to have any kind of break.
The year is 2019. Every media program is Marvel.
Pretty much.
Get ready, world.
Speaking of superhero movies, I am starting to get excited again about this Batman versus Superman movie. They released a shot of Batman's suit, and you can more clearly see it than anything that's in the trailers. And I just actually sent you an image of it. I think this is going to be the best on-screen suit. At the very least, I don't know how the movie's going to turn out. This is by far the best Batman suit I've ever seen. This looks way more faithful to the comics. It doesn't look like some dude wearing motorcycle armor. This looks way more like, I look at this costume even though Affleck isn't in it. I look at this and think, this looks frightening. If this guy was coming towards me, I would be scared. Christian Bale, all the previous Batmans, none of those suits look intimidating enough. This to me looks more like, it looks like it has a much more organic quality to it. Like it's some kind of lightweight material that allows him to move but still provides some level of protection. I love the Frank Miller inspiration. I mean, it's heavily inspired. The giant bat logo on his chest is totally ripped off from The Dark Knight Returns. The short, pointy ears makes him look very aggressive. Again, The Dark Knight Returns. The suit seems to have a bunch of seams on it, which look like they borrowed some of that from the New 52 design. So it's kind of got this organic sort of industrial look to it. I love the big chunky bat belt with the big pouches. I like the fact that the belt isn't yellow for once. That's nice, really nice. I don't know. It's looking really, really cool.
Yeah. Of course, on the other hand, they can make the props as nice as they want. If the movie's terrible, it's not going to matter.
Sure.
It's like if it's just 2 hours of Batman trying to kill Superman in slow motion. No.
Let's hope it's not that.
Do you this isn't bleach? Michael Bay. You will. Like, just that for 2 hours. Nope.
The tagline should be, "Get ready for your dick to fall off."
Batman 300. This is Gotham.
Oh. Yeah, Zach we'll see. Snyder. I can't believe we have to wait another year for this thing. I thought this was supposed to be released in 2015. And they pushed it. They pushed it back another year.
They're scared of Marvel, which they should be.
The thing is, this movie, they're going to be done. The post-production on this stuff, and it's going to be sitting there in the studio. I cannot imagine what that must feel like as a director to have to sit on this movie. You want the world to see this finished product, and you have to... They have to wait, like, another year.
Yeah. I don't know, though. I mean, I'm willing to bet they won't even get the Wonder Woman movie out the door until after Marvel releases Captain Marvel.
Why do you think that?
I don't know. I just feel like that'll happen because, I mean, Michelle McLaren left because of creative differences. So, I mean, the production is obviously struggling, shall we say. So it will probably be pushed back, I would think. And
I guess for me, the big question is, well, I guess it really depends on her performance and I guess how successful this movie is. But I guess it remains to be seen whether or not, what's her name? Gal Gadot? Whether or not she's going to come back for a standalone movie.
Yeah, I mean, it really remains to be seen if DC can actually pull off a cinematic universe or not. I mean,
I'm really getting worried because, I mean, first of all, these movies are what, under Warner Brothers? So I don't know how much involvement DC has in these movies. Like, I'm seriously starting to question their ability to come up with these movies that can compete on the same level in terms of quality with Marvel. Because Marvel's had all these hits.
Yeah.
I mean, the Captain America movies were great. The Avengers movie was great. Guardians of the Galaxy was phenomenal. So they're kind of on a roll here. And what does DC have to say for themselves? Not much.
Nope. I mean, God, if Ant-Man does better than Batman versus Superman, they don't have a chance.
Yeah.
Like, could you imagine?
Oh. Did you see the Ant-Man trailer?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What'd you think?
That trailer actually convinced me that it's going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've done the characters so much justice.
Yeah.
Like,
the suit looks
the looks suit really looks good. Great.
Looks just like the
and
comic.
The effects for the shrinking are perfect.
Yeah.
Totally right. Spot on. Like, the way his powers work and everything, mm-hmm. just exactly as you would expect it to be.
Yeah. I'm actually surprised that Michael Douglas is in this movie, but I think it's good casting, and he adds some probably will add some gravitas to that fantastical story.
Oh, I would think so. And I feel like there may be a little bit of a tie into Ultron because his character was the original creator of Ultron in the comic continuity. So it could very well be that Tony Stark builds Ultron from blueprints or something that was left behind by Michael Douglas's character.
Interesting. Speaking of Age of Ultron, that's coming out this week, isn't it?
May 1st. Yes. So next week. Next weekend.
Next weekend. Okay. Yes, I'm excited about that. I thought it was coming out this Friday for some reason. Which made me sad because I'm going to Vegas until Sunday. So I'm like, I won't be able to see it.
Yeah, no. It's next week. Next Friday.
Are you going to attempt to brave the storm and make it out on opening day?
No, I'll be seeing it on the 3rd. Already got the tickets, so.
Nice. Are they showing that thing in IMAX or what?
I'm not sure if they're showing IMAX. They are doing Ultra AVX, though. So that should be good.
Oh, that's better than nothing.
Yeah.
Ultra AVX sound like such a snob, but yeah, I mean, Ultra AVX is fine. It's not, it's noticeably better in terms of picture and sound quality than whatever the standard theaters are that haven't been upgraded in 20 years.
Some of the Ultra AVX theaters have actually been upgraded to Dolby Atmos. So
what is that?
It's Dolby's latest surround sound system. It's like, I'm not sure what makes it different. It's just noticeably better, though.
Okay. Now, is AVX completely digital?
Yes.
Is that the deal with that thing? Yeah. That would explain why it doesn't look like, when I see a movie in just like one of the standard theaters, everything looks so much more grainy.
Oh, yeah. Well, because it's running off of
shitty old projectors. Yeah.
But yeah, this is entirely digital off of a projector. So you get completely perfect picture.
Nice.
Yep, looking forward to it.
Actually, I never told you, speaking of film, this just popped into my head. But this has only happened to me once in my theater going lifetime. But I remember specifically when the first Home Alone movie came out. Watching it in theaters, going to the theater with my parents and my sister, and like 20 minutes into the movie, I see like a small black spot in the kind of lower middle part of the screen. And the black spot suddenly starts to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And then suddenly it looks like it's on the fire. Like, crap, the screen is on fire. It turns out the film caught fire in the production room. And they had to stop, of course, because the film caught fire. And they gave everybody free passes to come back again. So we had to come back another week just to see that movie. But that was the first and only time I experienced film catching fire.
Well, hopefully it's the last.
Well, it'll definitely be the last with AV. You know, the AVX stuff has got, at some point, has got to replace those other theaters, because those ones are starting to look pretty dated.
Yeah. Well, I think theaters are kind of overdue for an upgrade these days.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, I think there's something to be said for keeping film alive.
Well, I think so, too, but they do have to invest in keeping the theaters reasonably up to date, right? Because the thing is that they charge, like, Ultra AVX is still a premium over whatever the standard theater is.
Yeah.
And same with IMAX, right? Because they're trying to recoup costs for the larger theater, right? Because it's bigger screen, you know, it's digital, the actual hardware is more expensive, it's a bigger room, takes more time to clean, so they have to recoup costs somewhere. But at some point you would hope that eventually Ultra AVX will become the standard, and ticket prices will return at some point to what they normally would be. Mm. I mean, there has to be a way to keep people in the theater. And I think people will always be interested in, at least for the foreseeable future. You know, people, I think, enjoy going to see movies when they come out. Not everybody wants to wait. You know, there's something to be said for that anticipation and going to see a movie with good company. And I think that's something that will last for a considerable amount of time. But it is disappointing. Excuse me. It is disappointing not to see theaters keep up with the times.
Mm.
Like when my home theater system at home gets better picture quality than the movie theaters, they've done something wrong.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, yeah, if they're charging that kind of premium, it needs to be better than just sitting on your couch.
Right.
Right. I mean, you're getting the giant screen, obviously, but...
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah.
I could get a giant screen for my home, too, I mean. But, again, I mean, the picture quality and the sound quality have to be substantially better. But yeah, I mean, Ultra AVX is okay.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, do you want to wrap this up?
Yeah.
I got a plane to catch.
Oh boy! All right. Well, enjoy your trip to Vegas. This is your first time, right?
It is. It is my first time.
Well, I look forward to not hearing what happened in Vegas.
I'll try not to blow my fortunes.
Yep. Don't get lost in the casino. It's a money trap.
Yeah. Now I will probably I'll probably do some gambling, but you know.
So it's always okay.
I'll go easy.
Usually, the best thing to do is just kind of come up with an amount.
Yeah.
You're okay losing.
If I lose $50, I'll be fine.
Yeah. As long as you don't go over. It's like start coming in and you're this is awesome. Well, and then before you know
I know when to leave on a high note. So if I do end up winning any money, no matter what the amount is, I'm just going to take it and leave.
Yep. Always the best plan.
Yeah.
All right. Have a good one. And to all of you listening, thank you. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to another episode of The Impromptu. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to leave a rating on iTunes and let your friends know about us. Detailed show notes for each episode are available on our website at theimpromptu.net.
You can follow the show on Twitter at TheImpromptu, as well as our hosts individually at Zen Impulse for Michael Norton and at Zero Distraction for Alex Knight. As we are entirely listener-supported, you can donate to us at theimpromptu.net/donate. All proceeds go towards covering bandwidth as well as equipment upgrades to uphold the highest level of audio quality you've come to expect. We really do appreciate your support, and we look forward to seeing you next time.